Welcome to HealthCast, where leaders and experts from Stony Brook Medicine come together to discuss a range of topics, from leadership and strategic planning to patient care and the inner workings of a successful healthcare system.
Welcome, everybody. We're here today with Corinne and Doty, who are co-principal investigators on an important new pilot study. It's the only one of its kind. That study investigated the feasibility and benefits of telehealth in a cognitive behavioral therapy group setting as a promising solution to address access to care and treatment challenges experienced by many people who live with functional movement disorders. Those are disorders where timely treatment is crucial for achieving better outcomes. Corinne and Doty, welcome to the program. We're so happy you two could be on today.
Thank you.
So I'd like, if we can, start off with having each one of you introduce yourselves to our audience and tell us a little bit about what you do here at Stony Brook. And Corinne, you can go first.
Thank you. And thank you for the introduction. And thank you for bringing us here today. So I am a movement disorders neurologist here at Stony Brook Medicine. So I work in our Center for Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders, where I see individuals with Parkinson's disease, essential tremor, tics and disorders and Tourette's, as well as individuals with functional movement disorders.
Doty?
Hi, thanks again for having us. I echo that. I'm Doty Gillette. I am here as part of the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Health. I'm a clinical psychologist, and I work a lot with Corinne, primarily actually with patients from neurology, also treating folks with tics and Tourette's, functional movement disorders, and as well as Huntington's disease.
Great. Okay, let's start off with just kind of the basics so we can educate people and get them learning a little bit about functional movement disorders. Can you explain that and provide examples? And Corinne, if we can start off with you.
Sure. So this is a very common disorder that we see in the neurology clinic. However, despite being very common, it is oftentimes not recognized and it's not really well understood. It can present with a wide variety of different movements. So it can present with tremor, it can present with jerky movements, it can present with gait abnormalities. It is viewed as a neuropsychiatric disorder where oftentimes stressors, whether they be physical stressors or psychological stressors, can play a role. Oftentimes when we are trying to explain the condition to our patients, we explain it using the analogy of the brain as a computer. Yeah. We explain it that there is not a hardware problem. So individuals with functional movement disorders can have all normal testing. They can have normal MRI, normal EEG, normal blood work. But we know that there's a disconnect between certain parts of the brain that can contribute to their symptoms. And oftentimes these symptoms can be quite disabling.
Interesting. Is there an age range that you use traditionally see people?
So the most common age of presentation is between the 30s and the 50s. But really, individuals can present at any age. So there can be pediatric patients, there can be geriatric patients.
So Doty, we're going to talk about cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT. Can you explain that to us?
Sure, happy to. So cognitive behavioral therapy is known as CBT. The basics of cognitive behavioral therapy is we want to address an individual's thoughts and behaviors that may be maladaptive. And then we look to shift those thoughts and behaviors to more adaptive thoughts or behaviors, which in turn really improves mental and emotional well-being. So basically, if that's at our core, we do a lot of work to help challenge negative thinking styles and patterns and, again, improve those thought styles. It's an evidence-based practice. It tends to be time-limited. And we have a lot of evidence that it is very effective for a wide range of disorders. There is what's considered a third wave of CBT that also is often incorporated into CBT work. And that's sort of a more evolved way of looking at CBT. And instead of changing the thoughts, we look to accept those thoughts and help patients be non-judgmental about their experience. That's more of our DBT, dialectical behavior therapy, our mindfulness-based cognitive therapies as well.
So why telehealth?
Yeah, so telehealth is, first of all, I think it's a wonderful option for a lot of patients, especially in my area in psychology, and that it's very accessible to people. And so specifically looking at telehealth for a group setting, it allows people to really attend those groups easily. They don't have to worry about transportation. If these are people, especially in this group, with physical limitations, they can easily get to a computer. It's much more difficult sometimes to get to a clinic.
And I think there was some significance to group CBT versus individual. Why is that?
Yeah. So group CBT has been done, you know, repeatedly using in a wide variety of diagnoses. And it's, again, definitely absolutely an effective form of treatment. In terms of group for what we were looking at is really access to care. So we have a lot of demand for services and less availability of providers to be able to provide those services. So when we offer a group option, we can have a number of patients with one provider, and it really does open up access to care.
Great. So what other factors were looked at when determining how to do the study? You don't want to dig that one.
So, and maybe we'll share it,
sure.
Right? So, because there are a lot of factors that we needed to consider in terms of the design of the study, one of which was how we were going to measure success potentially.
Yeah.
So what outcome measures we were going to use. And so first we wanted to evaluate feasibility. So how easy it was for patients and how many patients actually completed the program. So really tracking the attendance of the patients.
Yeah.
And then we also wanted, looking at specifically what were important outcome measures. So what did we want to look before the intervention, after the intervention? And in there we took the lead from a publication from a couple of years ago that outlined the functional movement disorders core outcome measures. So not looking specifically at the abnormal movements that these patients have, but in terms of looking more at their quality of life, looking at their functional impairment, and looking at their overall mental health. So many of these individuals also experience anxiety and depression. So we also wanted to make sure that we track that.
Yeah. The only thing I'd add is I know in evaluating patients to be appropriate for the group, we just wanted to make sure that, A, they had access to a computer or phone to be able to do the telehealth, engage in the telehealth, and that they had the sort of cognitive abilities to also to be able to engage in a group and in telehealth.
So I am curious, when we talk about the group dynamic, did you find that was actually helpful with some of these folks to know that there were other folks out there also suffering?
Absolutely. I think that was probably our greatest takeaway from the group is that people absolutely reported a strong sense of community and feelings of support, as well as feeling almost like it was the first time they met somebody else who also had a functional movement disorder, which was validating for them to understand that they weren't alone in the process.
Yeah, because I can imagine the isolation that probably a lot of the patients feel is debilitating in and of itself. If you get some folks together and they can also see some benefit and progress, that has to be huge.
Right. So this is a disorder that when I give the diagnosis to patients in the clinic, many of them have never heard of this disorder. It's, as I said, while it's quite common, it's not highly recognized among lay people. And most people do not know somebody else with the condition. So yes, I think that was one of the features of the program that patients really appreciated. And One aspect of our study is that we also looked at, patients were interviewed after participation, and then a very talented medical student working with us, Vera Kulikoff, did a thematic analysis, where she found that patients highlighted that this connection with other patients was a feature that they really appreciated.
So that was almost an added benefit of the study that I would imagine.
Right.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. How many people participated?
Yeah, so we had 21 initially who enrolled, and then we had 20 who completed. So we had a really nice completion rate. Once people started, they typically completed the group. The group was laid out. We had three separate groups over approximately a year and a half period. That ran 9 to 10 sessions per group. And so it was approximately, I believe, 5, 6 to 9 people per group.
And the majority of the participants were women, correct?
That is correct. So I think that it was about 60 to 70% female. And that really does, that's similar to the percentage that's been published, that this condition is more common among females, typically in roughly a 3-to-1 ratio. That's been, we don't quite understand the reason for that, but that's something that is published from study to study.
Interesting. So you mentioned 9 to 10 sessions. Why that number? First of all, I'm kind of curious how you came upon that.
So looking at some of the primary skills involved in CBT, wanting to break it down and provide a specific skill each group session. And so we looked at a number of different skills that we wanted to give to the patients. And so that included things like identifying triggers, things like cognitive restructuring, looking at avoidance behaviors, as well as valuing offering some mindfulness strategies. And then we also offered an additional group at the end that was more of an open group for people to bring in a topic that they felt was important for them to discuss during the group. So that 9 to 10 sessions really allowed for us to have as much of the skills that we wanted to present in addition to a little flexibility.
Great. And so you mentioned success earlier. What does success look like in this study?
So success for us, I think, we can think of in several ways. So I think the fact that 95% of the patients completed the study is a sign of success, a sign of feasibility. Of those 95%, 80% attended all but 2 of the 9 or 10 sessions. So I think that that's phenomenal for us, and that's higher than what we were expecting. We also, success is that while it didn't meet, you know, while it wasn't statistically significant, there was a trend towards a better understanding of disease. So many of these individuals, as I told you, when I give them the diagnosis in the clinic, they've never heard of functional movement disorders before. And part of what helps them to get better is to come to grips with the disease and acquire a better understanding, and they seem to do so. Participants were overwhelmingly very satisfied with the program based on the results of our thematic analysis.
And what about quality of life improvements? What kind of things would we potentially see?
So I think what we'd like to see in terms of that quality of life is individuals from that group perspective, a lot of people would come to say they weren't leaving their home. They weren't engaging well socially with other people. They were becoming more fearful of that. They were becoming more uncomfortable, maybe more embarrassed of going out. So that quality of life of being able to engage more with others and to be out of the home is definitely absolutely an increase in sort of quality of life at that point. I you know, to Crane's point about the idea that there's a better understanding of the diagnosis, I believe also leads to increased quality of living because they're more likely to seek out the appropriate care when they understand what their diagnosis is, which then is also going to lead to a better prognosis.
Interesting. Were family members involved in it anyway?
No, we didn't have family members involved. No, initially, sometimes I do an initial evaluation prior to the group, and they may help the person sort of get set up initially, but no, they're not involved in the group itself.
Interesting. So it sounds like it was also great education for the folks who were in the study to learn more about what was going on and obviously how to deal with things. And where does this take us now? What are the next steps?
So ideally, we would like to, and we are continuing this program. So I continue to see patients with functional movement disorders in my clinic, and I continue to refer them to Dodi, who sees them and administers the group cognitive behavioral therapy. Ideally, we would like to expand this outside of Stony Brook, potentially at multiple sites with larger numbers, and as a randomized control trial.
Great. What would you like to see in the future?
I would love to see more, in that regard, more patients receiving faster care. Right. So that's ideal. And if we're continuing to do group programming, I think that's probably the best way to address that in terms of CBT and from that psychological perspective.
Well, I think we're about done. Anything you two want to add that we missed, maybe?
No, just thank you for having us. I think that this hopefully is getting out to others, and then we'll increase awareness.
It sounds like a great program. And that's the whole idea is to try to get the word out. You guys are doing fantastic work, and I'm sure helping a lot of people. It's encouraging to see studies like this. Okay, thank you all very much for being on the program today. You did a fantastic job. And thank you so much for watching HealthCast today. There was a lot of good information shared. Please stay tuned to our various podcast channels for more helpful and educational information. Thanks again for watching. Please subscribe to our podcast channels, and we'll see you with more great information soon.
Stony Brook Medicine is Long Island's premier academic medical center. We transform lives through scientific discovery, education, and care, and we bring together innovative research, advanced education, and extraordinary healthcare expertise to set the standard for how healthy communities thrive. For more information, visit stonybrookmedicine.edu or follow us on social media, Stony Brook Medicine on Instagram, Threads, Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn, and Stony Brook Med on X.